It's an idea so powerful, it can transform your business. It's an idea so personal, it can transform your life. It's an idea so intelligent, it can transform itself. Introducing PowerBook Duo from Apple.
Hello, and welcome to Colcast Best 30 Plus Minute Apple Conversation. You're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Irfan Elijah. Join me today. We're not barking out orders to the Cultimax staff. You'll find him asleep at his desk, often muttering about his nemesis, 9-to-5 Mac. Leander Caney is here.
I'm having a bad dream.
Also with us, his Cult of Mac story edits. They're legendary, just like his very powerful shoulder rubs. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey.
I know Leander gets one of those shoulder rubs almost daily, am I right?
Yeah. Every time that he's asleep like that and he starts twitching, that's what I, you know.
What a guy.
I relax him.
Wait, me having my bad dream about we got scooped by 9-to-5 Mac.
Yeah.
All right, here's what we got for you guys this week. Some choice tidbits, some of the best Apple stories of the entire year. Well, the first part, maybe not the second part, but we're going to dress them up as best we can. We're going to talk about Apple. It seems like they're closing up the self-driving car project. You probably heard about this. This is a wild ride, so to speak. You know, because they had this car project. We've been talking about it for, I don't know what, 2 or 3 years now. And it seems like it's just over with, like Apple has given up. So we'll tell you the details on that. Apple is reportedly developing their own sleep tracking tech for the Apple Watch. Lewis is going to tell us about that because I know a lot of us want sleep tracking added to the Apple Watch, myself included. I'm going to talk about Apple pricing. Now, I almost feel bad because I complain about this so often, about how Apple's prices have just gotten to be out of control. They just keep going up and up and up. And apparently, Apple's heard the message loud and clear. And it looks like they might even be doing something about their prices. I'll tell you about that. We're going to wrap up with an all-new Today in Apple History. This is one of the wildest, craziest Apple history stories that I've seen, and I was just telling the guys before we started recording, I can't believe this topic has never come up. We're going to talk to you about one of the most legendary, iconic Apple CEOs of all time, and I promise you, you've never heard about this guy, and you're going to be shocked that you haven't, because I was as well, and I've been doing this for 7 years now. Let's see here. Before we jump into all the fun, this episode of the Coldcast is brought to you by Shaper. Take networking from awkward to awesome with Shaper, the number one professional networking platform that uses your experience, interests, and goals to help you make the right connections. Check this out. Whether you're looking for investors, a co-founder, a new job opportunity, or just inspiring conversations, or maybe you want to build your professional network, Shaper can connect you to professionals who truly want to share tips and help. Here's how it works. Each day, it suggests 15 people with similar goals and interests for you to meet. Then all you have to do is take a few minutes to swipe through your daily profiles. You guys, this, I kid you not, I was talking to the guys at Shaper and they were describing this to me. I'm like, this is exactly like the Tinder for business people, am I right? And he was like, yes, that's pretty much what it's like. So you just go through and their algorithm will pair you up with people who it thinks that you would want to have a professional relationship. Professional,
yeah,
keyword.
Right.
Professional relationship with.
Professional.
Okay? This is not that kind of app. And then you just swipe through, and then it will help you set up coffees with the people that stand out to you. And if you're a professional, you're looking to build your network, this is a great way to do it. The Shaper app is available on the App Store, or you can just head to Shaper, that's shapr.co, shapr.co. So I was talking to these guys. I think this is a really good idea. In fact, I signed up for it as well, and I'm using it. So if you're in the Seattle area, you might. If you have Apple in your profile, you might just see my smiling face pop up, and maybe we can get coffee together. So yeah, that's shapr.co. Let's start with this self-driving car story, Leander, because it looks like this project, it may be at the end of the road.
The wheels are coming off, as they say, right?
Oh, I love these puns. Yeah. Let's keep them going.
Well, Apple has axed 190 employees from the self-driving car division, and this is official, you know, because they actually confirmed it. Mm-hmm. According to a report, anyway, Project Titan was reportedly greenlit towards the end of 2014. Apple hired hundreds of engineers setting out to design and build its own self-driving car. Apparently, it's been hit with numerous roadblocks, and it's supposed to be struggling, and the company's reportedly changed its focus towards making the underlying autonomous driving technology instead of a complete car. This is according to rumors. So after rumors surfaced last month, the company had slashed its workforce for Project Titan. Apple actually confirmed it, that 190 employees in Santa Clara and Sunnyvale had been released from the self-driving car project. And they did this with the EDD, the California Employment Development Department.
Oh, is so that why they had to report it?
Yeah, so it's actually official. It's official. They said that 190 had been let go. At the same time, there were some other details released. And the most worrying one was that Apple's cars had the human driver had to take over every 1.1 miles.
So, like, the car would do something stupid and the driver would be like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it better be drive off the road or into some oncoming traffic, and the human driver would have to, like, take the wheel. Hmm. By comparison, Google's Waymo project has disengagement of every 11,000 miles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one per every mile for Apple's self-driving car and every 11,000 miles for Waymo's. That's a big, big difference. So, you know, it's pretty unclear what the future is for the automotive ambitions. I mean, Tim Cook has said that this the self-driving car is the mother of all AI problems. Make it sound like, you know, they were actually solving some other autonomous problems as well as driving. At least that was the way my takeaway with it when I read that comment. And then I don't know. A lot of people in those reports were saying that, you know, they were linking this to iPhone sales dropping, saying that, you know, with iPhones with the last quarter, with iPhone sales actually sort of, you know, on the dropping for the first time, the company appears to be tightening its belt and jettisoning projects that aren't as promising. A lot of people, you know, link this to iPhone sales and make it sound like the company's tightening its belt, which I think is completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. For a company with like 200 and whatever it is, $50 billion in the bank. I mean, you know, they're not laying off people to save a few dollars here and there. But it's puzzling. I don't know. You know, like, I read these reports, and I'm going to do my next project is I'm going to do I'm going to look into all the different rumors and try to figure out exactly what's going on with the car driving project. Because actually, Lewis and I did the same thing. As soon as we heard this story, right, one of the stories listed all of these different buildings, you know, all the real estate. For some reason, I don't know why, but they listed all the buildings that the employees have been let go from. And one report, how many buildings was it, Lewis? Like about eight?
Eight different buildings.
Eight different buildings. So I looked every single one up and I mapped them all out. And, you know, I mean, there's a big cluster of buildings that Apple is involved in down there in Sunnyvale, Santa Clara. It's on the border between the two different towns. And, you know, Lewis looked them up on Google Street View and they're all kind of like anonymous, boring, you know, Silicon Valley type office buildings, nothing distinguishing about them at all. But I don't know, you know, like there's a lot of real estate. And there was a report like last year, maybe 18 months ago, from the San Jose Business Times, where they mapped out like some of Apple's real estate ventures. And they've been buying up big, big warehouses and old industrial plants down there in Santa Clara, in Silicon Valley. And I heard one rumor they were building a giant battery factory down there, like, you know, to rival Elon Musk's, you know, Giga factory up in Reno.
Right.
It's not going to be as big as that because that's a big, big building. But, you know, they had some big project down here. And it looks, I don't know, it's sort of, you know, the rumors are kind of a bit sketchy, but it looked like, you know, maybe they were setting up a manufacturing here in the States, which would make a lot of sense, you know, for a car because it's expensive and slow to ship cars from China, right, or from overseas. Mm-hmm. Almost all the every car manufacturer, like even the big German ones, you know, the biggest BMW plant is in, where is it, South Carolina? It's here in the States anyway, right?
I didn't realize they made them here.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They don't ship them here, they make them here.
I thought they made those BMWs in Germany.
Angela Merkel, they make them in Germany for the European market, but they make the US ones here in the US.
Huh.
Angela Merkel said, you know, because she was complaining about this, you know, with Trump and some of the trade stuff going on with the European Union. She said last week that the biggest BMW's biggest plant is in the States.
Wow, that's wild, actually.
Not really, because it makes sense, right? Think about it. You know, like, it's expensive and inefficient to ship.
I know, but do we buy more BMWs than all of Europe? I mean, you see BMWs everywhere when you go to Europe because they make BMWs that... BMW isn't a premium brand in Europe, is it? It's just a normal car. Here, it's a luxury car. Over there, they have like cloth interiors and stuff.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. You go over there, they have like the taxi guys driving a BMW and it's got cloth interior and... it's not considered a luxury brand there. At least I didn't think so when I've been to Europe, and I've been there a bunch. You just see normal looking BMWs that look like Honda Accords.
Hmm.
You know,
in London they used to call them. I won't say. it makes a lot of sense. They're going to build the car manufacturers build cars here, and you know, I think like Apple's. You know, some of the rumors were saying that. You know, Johnny Ive wanted to completely reinvent the car. And they were talking about, you know, globe-shaped wheels so that you could travel sideways, so you could travel backwards and forwards. Apple's MO has a lot to do with, they're really, really into manufacturing. I mean, you know, the manufacturing expertise is a huge part of it. And reinventing the supply chain and the manufacturing process, you know, has got to be a big part of their ambitions.
Well, hold on. Do you think that Apple is abandoning their... car efforts?
I don't know
if I buy this. It just seems like too big of an ambition for them.
Yeah.
And it also seems strange that this if you read this story the way I do, it seems like an admission of defeat. Look, we just couldn't do it. It's too hard. Google's cars don't have to disengage and ours do all the time, and so let's just try something different. This just isn't working out for us. It's hard for me to buy that.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. And the, you know, the rumors were that they were going to make a bus, you know, that shuttled employees between Infinite Loop and the new spaceship campus, mm-hmm. and then they were going to do the software for other people, and then they're supposed to be teaming up with Daimler, I think, mm-hmm. Another car manufacturer. None of those rumors make any sense. They don't make any sense whatsoever, you know. I mean, you look at Apple's MO. They own the whole widget, don't they? The whole banana. They want the hardware, the software, the services. This is what that's where the profits is in the hardware. But then again, if you like, I've been reading all this micromobility stuff, and you know, Horace Didier, the Apple analyst, I mean, he's totally into this micromobility. He thinks the whole car market is going to be massively disrupted by scooters, electric scooters, and electric bicycles.
You've said that before.
It makes a lot of sense. You know,
well, it does from a certain perspective. If you live in the city, then maybe that's true. But I think about, okay, I got to go to the grocery store, and you live outside of a city, and you're like, and your scooter going across the freeway, right? Going 40 miles an hour. It's like, you know, come on, give me a break.
On I-80, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it looks like there's two things going on, or maybe three, right? You know, one is that the drive chain is changing, isn't it? You know, like not just in cars, but in bicycles too. Electric, right? A lot of things are going electric.
Yeah, and everything is.
And so, you know, you've got electric scooters, you've got electric bikes, you have like small electric cars. Tesla just today just announced that they were going to have a $25,000 Tesla, right, for the first time.
Oh, is that the announcement they made today? I know something was coming. Okay, so they announced a $25,000 Tesla?
It's still going to cost you $35,000.
So if you qualify for government rebates on your taxes, then it's $25,000?
I don't know how it works, but yeah, okay. I think the base price is $25,000, but there's no way you're going to actually get a $25,000 one.
Wow, but even still, a $25,000 Tesla, that's wild.
Right, but then there's autonomy, too, right? So autonomy, and this is, you know, Apple's definitely looking at that because, like, you know, AI software, the whole software industry is changing, isn't it? I mean, you don't program anymore, you train, they're definitely looking at, and autonomy, AI has wide application, everything that Apple's doing, you know, they're going to be just like Google, like, you know, AI is going to touch every single piece of software they do, every single thing. So, you know, they're definitely interested in that. Whether it's actually going to turn into a self-driving car or not is another thing. But then you've got climate change. You've got, you know, cities changing. Like in Europe especially, this is really, really prevalent. You know, like Paris is shutting down. Which city is it? Oslo in Norway? I mean, they're shutting, you know, they're completely banning cars from the center of the city. And Paris is doing that increasingly. London's doing it. A lot of, you know, places are looking like, you know, cars have the sort of era of the city being owned, of, you know, being the domain of the car is definitely drawing to a close.
Well, like, especially with electric driven mobility, it's so efficient and it's fun and it doesn't create pollution. So I think you're going to start to see that type of transportation. Like you said, within the city, an electric scooter makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, right.
Especially if you have mass transit already and you can, you know, get on a bus with like your scooter, then get off and you,
yeah,
you know, head into your location.
Yeah, right. And a lot of small towns too, you know, I mean, it doesn't make sense, you know, when you're doing large distances. And this is what Horace Diddy is like, you know, his whole thesis is about, you know, he's looking at sort of like distances traveled. And it's, I can't remember what the exact number it is, but it's like, you know, between under 5 miles, under 7 miles, under 10 miles, whatever it is, you know, I mean, like, a bike and a scooter makes a lot more sense than a big car. But then between 10 and 30, you know, you want something that's a little more robust. And then 30 and above, you know, you're going to need something like a vehicle, you know, like a car, like a traditional car. But, you know, I mean, like, you know, if you have autonomous cars coming that are electric driven, I mean, you know, I mean, you could summon one, couldn't you? You could summon like some kind of like electric SUV that will take you down
autonomous,
to...
Yeah.
Yeah, take you somewhere.
I don't know. I just... The era of Johnny Cab, I just think that we're a lot farther away from it than people think that we are. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen in the next... I know that they're running, but they're only... Well, they're, what, are there four tiers of autonomy? And I think tier 4 is fully autonomous, where they can just drive around and you don't have to worry about them crashing into groups of people, you know, walking across the street. But I think we're only at tier 3. And that sounds like we're close, but the step between... partially autonomous and fully autonomous, I think, is a really big
that's true.
Chasm.
It's a big gap, yeah.
And it doesn't really seem like anyone is close to bridging that gap yet. Tesla's certainly working on it, as are other car manufacturers. I mean, I know Tesla's building their autonomous technology into every car, but it seems like we're like 5 to 10 years away from having a fully autonomous car. Yeah. Where a human doesn't have to be present at all. That would be, incredible.
Some people doubt that that's even possible. I mean, you know, there's been some industry leaders have just come out and said that, you know, that may never be, you know, they may never be able to build one that is completely autonomous. Because of things like, you know, like in snow, conditions of snow or rain, you know, there's so many different, you know, there are some edge cases that are really, really difficult to, you know, for it to solve. But like, you know, in daylight and on a, I mean, they're already running trucks, aren't they? Like there's a bunch of trucks that are running.
You mean like semi trucks?
Yeah, on the freeway.
Trailer trucks? Oh, yeah, I don't think so. Maybe under some type of test scenario, but
no, I don't know.
I think they're just driving around food and stuff.
I think they are.
I hope not. I hope not. I haven't seen one yet, but if I see one of those coming up in my lane, I'm going to be in the far other lane. I'm not got anywhere near that thing because I don't trust AI yet.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like it's so predictable, isn't it, on a freeway? That, I mean, you know, you don't have kids running out. They're not going to kick a ball. There's not going to be a pet running in the road.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah,
it's a very, very stable environment. You know, very, very predictable. And you know, it's when the truck leaves the freeway, you know, that it becomes more tricky. But you know, driving miles and miles on a freeway, I don't think really is not really that big a problem for a self-driving truck.
Here's what makes AI tricky. All right, when it comes to autonomous vehicles, there's a small window where it's actually going to do what it's supposed to do. If you make it too dumb, it's going to drive erratically and it's going to crash into grandma as she's crossing the street, right? If you make it too smart, it realizes people are the problem. And then it's going to go after grandma as she's crossing the street, right? So you got to make sure that it's not too dumb and it's not too smart, so it just stays in its lane.
Right, stays right there in the middle.
And that's hard to do.
Well, you know, I think even, you know, whatever, you know, whether you just, you know, I think that it's obvious that there's a lot of things going on, and Apple's definitely going to be in this. Like, it's like one of the biggest industries in the world, transportation, you know, and there's going to be a lot of changes in the next 10 or 20 years. And Apple is, and it's just like in the, you know, like the early days of the cell phone industry, you know, like it's dominated by the, you know, the car manufacturers right now are like this, like Nokia and Motorola and the other big cell phone manufacturers, you know, that era. Right, they know it. They're going to get disrupted, and they're probably going to get disrupted. But I mean, Silicon Valley, and they, you know, they're trying to do everything they can. I mean, Uber's like trying to get into, you know, like into they're really diversifying, aren't they? I mean, they're getting into, like, you know, into scooters and into bicycles, and it has a lot to do with, like, mapping and urban infrastructure. You know, I mean, they're all there's going to be a lot of big changes in the next 10, 20 years. And Apple is definitely looking at this because it's such a huge, huge industry.
Yeah, I don't see them sitting out, which is why this story to be so interesting. Because this makes it sound like they're giving up. And I'm like, I really don't think
I don't think so. And there's no way. I think they want to, you know, I wonder sometimes they don't like to have these stories, you know, like to try to put their competitors at ease, right? It's like, oh, no, don't worry. Apple's in trouble. You know, they're laying people off. I mean, I think it kind of looks good for them strategically, right?
It's like counterintelligence. They're like, ooh, we don't have to worry about Apple now.
Right.
But then secretly Tim Cook is getting chauffeured around by a self-aware driving vehicle. Right. He's like, hey, y'all. And he drives by. So what was that? Did you hear that?
190 people getting laid off is just
They were moved around to different compartments or different departments within Apple, right? I think they were just fired.
I think they were laid off. That's why the EDD was involved.
Oh, because when I was reading this, they have a bunch of engineers and stuff, and it seems crazy that Apple would just say, okay, all these really brilliant people that we recruited and hired for this, we're just going to let them all go?
Well, apparently, there was a story a couple of years ago that they did exactly the same thing, and I think even the numbers then were even bigger, weren't they? Do you remember that, Lewis?
There's been a bunch of shakeups in this, right? I mean, but it's always like, who knows what's exactly going on? Isn't this the first time that it's been like, here's a report to the EDD about people being let go?
As far as I know, yeah.
So,
I wonder if you could look up the, you know, like if they did it before, but if you could look up those reports.
Somebody did at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Right.
Apparently.
Some actual journalism. What do you know?
Well, because I believe the numbers were bigger. I can't remember what they were. Was it 1,000? Does that sound right? Or was that?
Yeah, but I think some of that was like juggling people, though. I think that is true. Like people got moved around inside Apple or something.
Well, one of the things I noticed about this is that they talked about product design engineers. And product design is when they try to set up factories to make something. So if they've got product design engineers involved, you know, as we said before, you know, that they're looking into the manufacturing of this stuff, of some hardware.
Well, I hope they come up with something, because if this turns out to be just an app that you can use to figure out where some electric bicycle is or something, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Yeah, right.
Okay, Lewis, tell us about sleep tracking. I like to sleep. Sometimes I don't sleep well. And I would like to know how often I'm getting up, maybe how many ales I can have before I have one of those classic bad nights of sleep. And I'm just tossing and churning all night.
Yeah, I mean, latest little rumor is that Apple Watch could add sleep tracking tech that makes it even more capable as a health monitor. And Apple's supposedly been testing the new sleep tracking tech at secret sites around Cupertino, a new report claims.
What?
Yeah, I love that, secret sites around
Cupertino. What,
you mean
like at the local mattress store?
Yeah,
they should have said sleeper sites, by the way. This is a huge missed opportunity.
Oh, yeah. You know, maybe we'll go in and edit that story, juice it up a little bit. You know, the rumor is that this could ship as part of Apple Watch by 2020. What?
No, sorry, go ahead. I'm making bad jokes. I was just, the puns continue, but you're on a roll. Don't let me stop you.
You know how they do this stuff, right? They do this with all the Apple Watch stuff. They put it in, you know, they put people in swimming pools, testing the swim thing, right? For, you know, swim tracking, all this stuff. They really do a lot of this kind of stuff. So who knows what, I mean, secret sites, I don't know. Do they have sleep booths, or are they just actually, you know, send it home with a handful of testers? Anyway, the health app for iOS, as you may already know, it has sleep tracking. It's had that since 2014, but it just pulls in information from the clock app's alarm function, which is, you know, kind of lame. Up until now, you've had to use like third-party devices or third-party apps to bolster that data. I use one called Auto Sleep that gives you a lot of really disturbing information about exactly how little you sleep and how ready you are to face the day.
How many hours of your life have been taken off every night when it realizes you just don't sleep?
Right. As was pointed out in the story, one of the problems with the whole sleep tracking thing in the Apple Watch is that the Apple Watch, you know, the battery only lasts like 18 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, I've made it through the day and the night with an Apple Watch, one charge, you know. You can do that.
I do that all the time, yeah.
Yeah. And
I wear mine every night.
Do you charge it in the morning after you get up?
Yeah, I charge it at work during the day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, 18 hours actually, I mean, as far as that
it is
estimate
that
goes, I think that's conservative.
Yeah.
With the Apple Watch Series 4 anyway, I don't know. To me, it seems like it lasts longer than that. Anyway.
Well, they also have this other gadget that they purchased the company that manufactures it, right?
Right, yeah. I don't know that much about this, but Apple acquired a Finnish company called, a Finnish company based in Finland called Bedit. Bedit makes a sleep tracking sensor strip that you kind of, you know, strap around your mattress. Apple bought this company back in May of 2017. At the end of last year, the latest version of the Bedit sleep monitor launched, the first version since Apple acquired the company. I've never used one of these.
Yeah, me either.
I don't know if any of you guys have.
No,
it's $150. It's like, do I want to track my sleep that bad?
Yeah, no. I don't know how bad I need that. I actually do like using auto sleep on my watch, though. And I may have mentioned this in the past. I mean, I use my original Apple Watch, which does not have great battery life. I wear that at night and charge my Series 4, you know, and start wearing that during the daytime. So it's, but I love having that information. I love the fact that it says, hey, you got a really great night's sleep last night, or hey, you only slept for 5 hours last night, and only two of those were actually deep sleep, or, you know, 45 minutes was deep sleep. You know, you really are, you know, you're behind for the week. You know, be sure to take a nap right in the middle of the workday tomorrow and tell Leander and give him this data about why you need it.
That's useful.
That's a feature request. I need it to craft a memo I can send directly to my boss explaining why I need to sleep during the workday.
Is it actionable, though? I mean, like, have you changed your habits or done anything, like, based upon this information you've got?
Not really. And to be honest, I haven't been doing this all that long. I mean, I got that app maybe a month ago or something. But I definitely look at what it has to say about, you know, what happened last night while I was asleep. You know, how low did my heart rate go?
That's kind of creepy information, isn't it? It's like, you know, what your body's doing all throughout the night. And
yeah. And I mean, to be honest, I wonder if it works better with a Series 4, you know, because I mean, as we've mentioned, the original Apple Watch is kind of janky and slow. But
yeah,
they've also got a companion app called Auto Wake that it tries to wake you up when you're not in deep sleep, you know, like picks the right time to tap a little haptic alarm on your wrist. I've only started using that one, and I've never gone to bed early enough where it says, okay, you've had 8 hours of sleep and now it's time for you to wake up. I keep getting a thing saying you had 4 hours, quit playing darts. Anyway.
Speaking of sleep, let me just tell you, if you want to go to bed on time, do not download TikTok on your iPad. I pitched that app on a previous show, and I am addicted to TikTok. Every night I boot up TikTok, and I watch people moonwalk, and I watch people act out their favorite movie scenes. And I always tell myself every single night, literally every single night, I'm only going to use this app for like 15 minutes, and then poof, I look at the clock, and it's 1:30 a.m., and I have to force myself to put the iPad down and actually go to sleep.
You need to set some parameters in the Do Not Disturb app or whatever
it is. I'm not going to let my iPad
not Do Not Disturb.
Tell me what to do. Screen time?
Screen time, yes. Yeah, yeah. You need to limit yourself.
I don't understand. That seems so ridiculous. Like when people set limits on their internet use time on their routers... And so you're using it, and your phone's like, okay, you're all done. You're like, no, I'm not. You just go in and you turn it off, right?
Said the guy who just complained about being up too late watching videos.
Yeah. You know, I'm admitting there's no solution. I'm just going to be tired all the time.
And these are videos of what? People cleaning belly button lint and...
You know, there's only a couple of people that I follow that specialize in that type of content. It's mostly just people being creative. There's a ton of people dancing, and then people are are doing videos based upon other people's videos. Some people just play music and just stare into the camera. It's one of the strangest, most addictive social media apps I've used. And it's also one of my favorites. I used to just watch YouTube videos of Dr. Disrespect playing games at night. But that just would rile me up because he's so aggressive. And he's such a incredible specimen of a man. I just found myself, you know, being awakened by that content. So I thought maybe TikTok would be better. It's not. It's just the same. It's so entertaining. And it's so easy to lose track of time because the way it's built, if you don't like content, you just swipe up and then poof, a whole new video is there and you're watching one video after another. So you're just swiping, 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 swiping all night. It's like a mixture of Vine and YouTube. And actually, there's probably no other app that's like it in regards to it being focused around musical content, audio content. It's got some elements that no other social media app has. Anyway, if you haven't tried it, check it out. Last time I talked about it, I had several people tweet me and say, dude, I'm addicted to this app now too. And I was like, I'm sorry. I shouldn't even have mentioned it. But you should check it out if you haven't already. Let me see here. We got to talk about the high prices of iPhones and Apple equipment.
Speaking but before, of losing sleep.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. What does that mean? Because people are losing sleep because the prices are so high.
Yeah, well, I think that, we're getting a little bit ahead of things here, but I think that probably there's some Apple executives are losing a little bit of sleep. Like, geez, you know, we painted ourselves into a corner with this. I don't know.
I gotcha. You might be right, especially with all the news around Apple not selling as many units as they expected or had hoped. But before we talk about that, let me say thank you to Burrow for supporting this episode. Burrow is rethinking how people shop for and live with their furniture by making high-quality sofas that are customized online, shipped for free in 1 week, and set up in minutes. Burrow is built to adapt to your life with stain-resistant fabric. It has a built-in USB charger. What other couch features that? So you can sit on your couch, be fat and happy while you have a movie on, and also browse your iPhone and not even pay attention to the movie at all, like I do. And the frame of the couch is made from sustainably sourced wood. Burrows are easy to set up and disassemble, and you can also make it bigger anytime it grows as you do. Burrow is designed for comfort with proprietary foam that is supportive yet cozy, and the ability to customize every detail like the armrest height. You can also shop Burrow's line of pillows and throws to complement your sofa with four unique pillow collections. I'll say this. I talked about this before. I purchased a couch probably 2 or 3 years ago, and I wanted something that was nice. It was my first couch purchase as an adult, and I love mid-century style. My house has a mid-century vibe, and I like to select furniture that looks mid-century, that kind of has like that classic 50s look to it. So when I was first talking with Burrow, I was looking at their couches, and I was like, holy moly, these look very mid-century. I love the design of these, the aesthetic of these. They let you customize all the fabric, the legs, and everything. And the couch that I bought was made in North Carolina. I like furniture that's made in America. And it was really expensive. Like after tax and everything, it was probably like $2,500. And Burrow couches, I learned, they're also coincidentally made in North Carolina. But they are far less expensive than couches you buy from retail stores because Burrow makes them and then sells them directly to you. It's that direct-to-consumer model. So they save you a buttload of money. And of course, you get a USB connection in your couch, which is something that I have not seen in any other couch. It's a really useful feature, especially if you're into technology, as everyone listening to this show is. Well, Burrow was recently named one of the best inventions of 2018 by Time Magazine. And for a limited time, you can get $75 off your award-winning Burrow sofa by visiting burrow.com/cultcast. That's burrow.com/cultcast to get $75 off your order. Okay, let me talk about the high prices of Apple hardware. I do feel bad talking about this because I feel like I bitch about it a lot. But every time I do, I hear from people who are like, I feel like Apple's pricing me out of the market. So there's a lot of you out there that feel the same way I do, I know. Jeff Williams, Apple COO, was recently doing a talk at some place, Elon University. And he was asked about pricing, and he went on to say, we do not want to be an elitist company. We want to be an egalitarian company, and we've got a lot of work to do in development markets. Pricing is something that we're very aware of, and I couldn't help but chuckle a little bit when I read this. I'm like, you don't want to be an elitist company? That's what Apple has always been. They've always been an elitist company. They don't want to be the PC of the PC market, right? They want to create high-quality products at a price that they can make a profit on and sell to a selection of the market, but not sell to everyone. I was like, dude, do you know who you work for? Anyway, he was saying that Apple is very aware of the rising costs of iPhone and Mac computers. And Tim Cook actually recently admitted that the company is rethinking its pricing, particularly in regards to the iPhone, because people are complaining that the iPhones are expensive. And that's doubly true, I think, for the Macs. I mean, just look at the iMac Pro, $5,000 base price. And many of you who haven't checked out an iMac Pro don't know, that's only with 16 gigabytes of SSD space. You know, if you want to go up to like 128, it's like $45,000. Let's see here. And then Williams went on to say, the stories that came out, oh, I should start with this. So someone was saying, well, how can you charge so much for your products? The analysts often tell us how much these Apple products cost to make, and you're making a ridiculous profit margin on these. I'm paraphrasing. And Williams went on to say, those stories that come out about the cost of our products has been the bane of my existence from the beginning of time. He said that analysts don't really understand the cost of what we do and how much care we put into making our products. And he gave a really good example. He was talking about how Apple had to build their own physiology lab with 40 licensed nurses. And if you know any nurses, you know they get paid pretty well. And enlisted over 10,000 study participants to develop some of Apple Watch's most important features. And you hear this kind of stuff all the time. Like when they were testing the swimming features of the Apple Watch, they had to do these ginormous studies and bring in all these health professionals to help them develop the Apple Watch. And you know that kind of stuff is enormously expensive. And it's actually a good point, because when analysts look at the cost of the actual hardware, they don't take into account, I don't think, what it costs to actually develop the device itself. They just look at it from a actual component cost level, right? Which is not how much the device costs Apple to build. They don't take into account any of the actual expense. So there you go. I'm not justifying the high cost of Apple gear. I do think that it's outrageously expensive.
Well, look at the phones that, you know, like at Mobile World Congress last week, the folding phones, right? From Samsung and Well, $2,000, but that's what happens, you know, when you get new tech, right? It's super, super expensive to develop this stuff. And of course, like, if that stuff takes off, which is never going to, but if it did, you know, those factors are going to come down. Look at the price of TVs. Remember when the first flat screen TVs came out, you know, they were several thousand dollars. Now you can pick them up for, a few hundred bucks. And that's, you know, that's how the industrialized system works, doesn't it? You know, they it's expensive at the beginning because all the tooling, all the research, all of the, you know, the new factories they have to set up, the new processes. But then as they churn them out, you know, the more they churn out, the cheaper they get. And this, I think, is true for a lot of the cell, you know, the iPhone, the new iPhone. I mean, look at all the crazy tech they put into that. New screens, a whole new Face ID system. You know, the chips alone. I mean, the chip is insane in that thing. The A12 is mad. The amount of technology is crazy. It's a super powerful computer. It's a bargain, really, I think.
There it is. That's what I was waiting for.
Preach it, brother.
Camera. Oh, yeah. Is that Tim Cook over there? I didn't hear any. Hey, y'all, it's me. Tim Cook on the line.
They've re-architected the thing. So, you know, and they're recouping their costs. That's why it's expensive.
And then that technology eventually works its way down into the lower price models. Also, one of the things I want to point out, I'm not making any justifications, but I think the historical context is actually interesting because, I mean, there was a period of time where Apple computers were way more expensive than they are now, right? I mean, didn't we have computers costing like $7,000, $8,000, $9,000?
Yeah, easily. I mean, like, you know, the original Mac, I think, you know, was what, $6,000, $7,000? And
but if, the
by
Lisa,
time you tricked it out, it'd be like 10 to 12, yeah.
I think the Lisa was $10,000, maybe even more, maybe even 14. Yeah. And what year was that, 1986?
Lisa probably would have been a bit earlier. The Mac was 84, so
introduced in, I thought the Lisa 1983.
Didn't the Lisa
$10,000?
There you go.
Which is like $25,000 now.
Now that was one beautiful computer too. It looked like something out of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that to say, yes, they are expensive. I fully admit that, and I get frustrated about it all the time. In fact, sometimes it really chaps my hide. But there are periods of Apple's history where...
Well, Apple's always been, you know, they don't...
An elitist company?
No, it is. It has that reputation for sure, you know. And you know, it's very, very true. They're not making the cheapest... they're not making the cheapest products. They're not going for that, the mass market. But, I think what they're trying to do is they're not trying to make the most expensive products. I mean, the one thing that was really a standout, like, what the heck, was the gold Apple Watch Edition. That was really strange. That was completely out of, character for Apple, because that was truly an elitist product. Who's going to spend $10,000 on a gold watch that's going to be,
outdated in a year?
Yeah, in a year. So that was the one that I can, that I really think was like a totally weird outlier. And I think they did it for marketing reasons, to try to make it to get celebrities to wear this thing to get attention for it. But they haven't done that since. I really do think, even though their products are expensive, I think they're trying to make them as affordable for the widest selection of people possible. And I think, if you look at the popularity of them and the global popularity, they've largely succeeded at that.
I agree. Clearly what they're doing is working, but it's still frustrating when you're looking at the price of a MacBook Pro and to get the features that you think are required to actually have a machine that's going to serve you well for the tasks that they market it for. It's going to cost you $4,000. It's like,
oh,
shit,
yeah, yeah.
It
is, yeah. But this is a machine that you probably will keep, for 4, 5, maybe 6 years.
Until the 16-inch MacBook Pro comes out, right. Which, by the way, oh my gosh, Segway King, L. Caney, I put out a video on my YouTube channel this week that I almost forgot to mention, and it's the 8 things Apple better get right about the 16-inch MacBook Pro, and I let them have a wallop, and I lay out all the things that I'm hoping that they fix with the MacBook Pro so that I can be nice and ready and excited when the 16-inch MacBook Pro comes out, because I think that's going to be a real banger of a machine. I mean, a 16-inch screen, complete redesign from the ground up, says Ming-Chi Kuo. We're finally getting a complete redesign. I mean, we've been...
Yeah, wait to see how much it costs.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, yeah, it's the base price is going to be $5,000. And, oh, by the way, 128 gigabyte SSD. it's going to be like that.
Well, the unibody, right? How they make those things. They carve it out of a solid piece of aluminum using a CNC machine. The CNC machines cost, I think $1 million each, or somewhere around there.
A milli?
Something like that. They're crazy. Apple bought up, has been for years been being up, so like the entire supply of CNC machines.
The entire market of CNC machines.
Nobody's ever done this before. CNC machines were used like for aerospace or for like Formula One racing. No mass market manufacturer has ever, churned out thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of products using CNC machines. It is super, super expensive.
Hmm.
But now they've got like factories and factories full of CNC machines, so they're putting them to use, and I don't know, like the prices kind of do come down, but they're really uncompromising, like they push manufacturing and manufacturing technology. I mean, people used to stamp stuff, right, or do it in plastic. I mean, Apple, if they used traditional sort of injection molding plastic to make the cases, which a lot of my other manufacturers do, they could shave hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars off of the price of some of their products. They would be, if they used... But then you'd have a cheap plastic machine, right? You'd have a cheap plastic phone.
You're right. And ultimately, like you said, Apple can release whatever they want, and I'm going to bitch and moan. And some guy on my YouTube channel even said this. He's like, you bitch and moan, but we all know whatever they release, you're going to buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, you know what, dude? I hate you, but you're absolutely right. That's entirely true. I'm going to buy it no matter what, and I'll bitch about it, but I'm still going to lay out the $4,000 to buy it. I'm going to pre-order it, by the way. I can't even wait for it to actually come out in stores. Okay, let's wrap up with this. We're running long again, so I'll try to get through this as fast as possible. Today in Apple history, massive layouts clear out Apple's quote-unquote Bozo explosion. The Bozo explosion historic event that you've never heard about. And you don't want a Bozo explosion in your business. That's the last thing that you want if you're trying to be successful. The date is February 25th, 1981. This is the best part of this story. You're not going to believe me. You're not going to believe what I'm about to say. Apple CEO February 25th, 1981, Apple CEO is Michael Scott.
That's what she said.
How did we never hear about the fact that Apple had a CEO named Michael Scott later? How, this is actually because your fault. I lay the blame entirely on your shoulders.
I forgot myself.
This You're the Apple historian.
Oh my God, this is
how did
years
you never tell
ago.
Us about the fact that Apple had a CEO who was literally Michael Scott?
It was so long ago. No, everyone's forgotten about it.
In name and behavior, and I'll prove that in just a moment. So, Michael Scott, the Michael Scott, he oversees a mass firing of employees, then holds a massive party in true Michael Scott fashion. He lays off 2,000 people, and then he holds a big party. At the time, Apple was growing incredibly quickly with almost 2,000 people on the payroll. Michael Scott, he thought the company had simply grown too big, too fast, and the expansion led to what he called a bozo explosion, with Apple employing people he did not consider A players. The event went on to be known as Black Wednesday. Former Apple programmer Andy Hertzfeld remembers the bizarre event this way. He said Black Wednesday was one of a number of shakeups which took place at Apple when things were going great, right? Because normally layoffs happen when the company's not doing well, but he goes on to say sales were doubling almost every month. So it was a little unusual, I would say, to have this layoff. And here's a quote from Michael Scott in true form. He said, "I used to say that when being CEO at Apple wasn't fun anymore, I'd quit. But now I've changed my mind. When being CEO isn't fun anymore, I'll just fire people until it is fun again."
That's what she said.
And that's exactly what he did.
What?
That's what he said, according to the quotes. And I couldn't believe what I was reading because I'm like, not only is this guy named Michael Scott, but that is something that Michael Scott would say in the office, is it not?
It is totally.
And everyone, and like he says that, and then they cut to Jim, and Jim's like looking at the camera, you know, puzzled. Because this guy is just laying off people, even though there doesn't really seem to be a good reason to do it. And then he throws a party.
Right. I know. It's pretty heartless and pretty weird.
You need to write a book about Apple Scott.
I have different memories. I haven't read the story, but, you know, I thought it was Steve Jobs that coined the term bozo explosion.
Oh, really? Maybe it was.
It may not have been. I don't know. I just did a quick search, and it said that, he may have done. But it sounds like the kind of thing he would say, doesn't it?
Well, wait a second. Why was this guy even CEO in the first place? Like, where was Steve Jobs through all this? Was he ousted
already?
No, he
was the first CEO.
Michael Scott was Apple's first CEO? This just keeps getting better. How did we not know this?
I mean, how did you not know it?
Well, you never talked about it. I doubt you knew it either. You're pretending
like
you knew
it. Well, we didn't talk about the early days. Yeah, I know. I'm totally winging it. But
this
he
is
was
the
like a salesman,
days.
Wasn't he, Lewis? And it was, wasn't it marketer's idea to get, you know, because Jobs was what, 20 years old?
Yeah.
Was 20 years old?
Yeah, according to my extensive research on Wikipedia, yeah, Mike Markula persuaded Michael Scotty Scott, who had been at National Semiconductor, to be the first CEO because Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were seen as too insufficiently experienced.
Yeah, they had an adult in the room, some adult supervision.
Right. Isn't it like Sheryl Sandberg at Facebook too? It's like all these like 20-year-olds start these billion-dollar companies.
Right, exactly, yeah. They need someone who knows what they're doing, like, you know, to run these things. And of course, like, Apple was growing so fast and selling, you know, that they had to hire people to keep up with the business that they were generating. And that's why, and from what I remember, and it may not be right, but I think a lot of them were from HP. They brought in all these HP managers, and so then Apple kind of turned into like HP, and that's why they call it a bozo explosion, because all these, like, you know, Jobs hated all these HP people because they were so unimaginative. They just wanted to, like, get a, you know, stand apart and put it in a cheap box and sell as many as possible. And it drove him crazy because it was like antithetical to, like, you know, Apple's whole philosophy of making beautiful machines and beautiful software and integrating the whole thing. You know, he was fighting this culture that was getting imported with all these, you know, bozos coming from other Silicon Valley companies.
Bozo explosion. Thank the gods that Steve Jobs was such a megalomaniac that he was able to wrestle the reins away from all these untalented executives and business people on the long road to the middle and take Apple to a place that otherwise absolutely would not have gone.
I mean, you know, you never know. What if he had been the first CEO? Would Apple have ever got off of the, you know, off the launch pad? Really, they may not be. You know, they may not be an Apple today if he had been in charge as a, you know, as a rash 21-year-old all those years ago.
As some stinky long-haired hippie running Apple.
When he got
Apple.
Stressed out, did you hear that one? He used to put his feet in the toilet and flush the toilet.
God. I have never heard that story. Is that true?
It's in that movie Jobs, which I saw part of the other day.
So it's obviously true.
This is one of the stories. Apparently, he used to de-stress him. He used to put his foot in the toilet and then flush the toilet over his feet.
My God, I'm not alone.
Keep that up, you will be.
I knew there was something about him that linked me to him. I had no idea we had that in common. Okay, well, we're not going to top that. Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and wrap up there. We're wrapping up with Michael Scott and Steve Jobs flushing his feet in the toilet. You can't top that. We should even skip our show next week. All right, that's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. But if you guys want to come say hi, talk to us about any stories we mentioned on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. The editor is at LK Lewis, is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the cult cast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the cult cast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Boom.
Okay. Getting more and more bizarre, but
you guys should see the hand motions I make while I do that.
Right.
I'm literally making hand motions. I was chopping the air. I was doing some nipple flicks. I was doing some finger pointing. You gotta keep it animated. If you do it in your hands, it comes out of your mouth. That's a motto I literally just made up.
Thank God it's an audio podcast.
Don't you agree?
I like the taste of milk. Have you tried it?
Lord. This just took a turn for the weird. It was weird
it's
before,
really,
but now you
it's
made
really
it
really sweet.
You're talking about human breast milk? Straight from the tap, no doubt.
Where else am I going to get it?
You
I've definitely
man.
Tried it. You haven't tried it? Come on. You must have.
No. I have not tried it.
Give it a
once.
Try.
No.
Give
thank
it a try.
You.
I like it. I actually. I tried to get it to milk. I tried to milk it for some my tea one time.
You're like, my coffee's a little too black, honey. God. What can you do for me?
I'm never going to feel comfortable in the office again.
Yeah, that creamer in the half and half container, Lewis, if it says Lander's name on it, trust me, you don't want to use it.
Oh, my God.
That was years ago. My God, they haven't had a kid for 20 years.
Yeah, but I have full confidence. You're buying it on the black market now.
It was
now.
Good. It was really sweet. It's sweet. It tastes good. I liked it.
It's just the idea of drinking a fluid from another human's body. I just, you know.
Nah, it's natural.
This is why we can't air the entire episode.